In a week, tell me, how is everything? Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some ass.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, sponsored this month by our friends from Foolish Wit. Head to foolishwit.com to check out all the details on their latest show. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Tonight on this fabulous Easter Sunday, we are joined in the studio by musician and sound and lighting designer Brendan Packard. Then we head to Wellington to chat with singer-songwriter Emma Jane before going to London to chat to Nick Brown about his current journey on stage in the West End. To kick off the show today, I'm replaying a song we ended with last week because it was sent in by Sophie Toyne, but due to timing, we only managed to play a little bit of it, and that wasn't good enough because it's a great song. So here it is, Every Little Moment.
Things I wanna say. Ooh, oh. Everything meant so much, like the tooth fairy coming each month.
time. Every little moment. Just 16, I believe, Emma.
Sounds amazing.
Absolutely. And speaking of Emma, I said the wrong Emma at the start of the show. Emma Kate is joining us. Not Emma Jane. Emma Kate is joining us a little later from Wellington. Happy Easter.
Yeah.
How many Easter eggs did you eat today?
Well, considering I'm not meant to be eating Easter eggs, I've eaten a lot.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
But, you know, those are what's getting us through, little sweet treats.
But the bigger question, did you have today off in your madness, or did you have rehearsals?
No, we've had a six-hour rehearsal today, rehearsal Friday and Saturday and today, and then we pack into the theatre tomorrow.
And I think since we've had you back, because Kristen was here last week, you've got your bad jelly boosted all went through. Congratulations.
Yeah, it actually went through like 2.5 days early.
Yay,
should we talk about the really bad experience I had with Air New Zealand last week?
Oh, no, yes. Yeah, you had a lovely time in Queenstown.
I did. Meant to be flying home Sunday. That flight got delayed. We got told at 3 o'clock in the afternoon it wasn't happening and I was coming back Monday. I thought I can handle one extra night. Had a beautiful dinner with my whānau down there, you know. Thank you very much to the Pullers for cooking me a yummy, yummy dinner. Got on the plane. I've never had that experience. Going down the runway and suddenly there was a loud bang. I was like, did the tyre pop? Mm-hmm. The whole plane shuddered. We came to a screeching halt. And the next second all you could smell was fuel.
Oh.
And we were like... And they were like, please sit tight. And we're just all sitting there. And the next second you see the fire ambulance coming towards you and everything. And they were like, we're going to try and taxi you back. And then I ended up being on a flight the next day.
What did actually happen? Did you find out? Did it blow a tire?
No, it was something to do with the air going through the engine. If it doesn't go correctly through, it kind of pops it back out frontwards or something.
That was very technical.
Mm. Yeah, it was very stressful. Yes. And then when I got on the plane the next day, we were delayed. I didn't know why we weren't taking off. And they said, there are more heads on board than on the paperwork.
Oh, no.
And I went, oh. Well, the next second they came up to me and said, can you please show us your boarding pass?
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, yes. Because what they'd done was they put me on the flight, then they bumped me to another flight, then they put me back to this flight, but I was still on the paperwork as being on the other flight. So, yes,
it's just a miracle you're here, really.
I got home. That's the main thing. And then bad jelly starts this week.
Fantastic. You got bad jelly this week. And then where are you heading next week? You've got two big things this holidays.
Yeah. So we're doing a double bill in Invercargill. So we've got 70 rangatahi aged between 8 and 18. And we're doing the big one, O Junior, with the 13 and unders. And then for 14 to 18-year-olds, we're doing Mary Poppins Junior.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So, just another quiet couple of weeks for you then.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll see you in 3 weeks' time.
That's the one.
Well, we're delighted today to talk something a little bit different, as we're going to talk sound, lighting and the theatre world. Welcome to the show, Brendan.
Thank you, Stephen.
It's great
to be here.
Great to have you here. And look, we caught up recently and you sparked my interest and I said, come and tell our listeners what you're up to. But before we sort of talk about where you're heading, let's go back and talk about where you've come from. What was it that first kicked off your journey in the arts, and was it in lighting and sound?
Well, if we go way, way back, it was as a young boy, watching my father play in the local brass band in Balclutha, South Otago.
That's cool.
And I guess that was where I wanted to go to, rather than play in the playground, I wanted to go and play this lovely, shiny little instrument.
Yeah.
But I had to wait until I was 8.
Right.
And so when I was 8, that's when I started my journey as a musician in a brass band, and got some great tuition and some great experiences. But by the time I got to 14, brass band music wasn't my thing anymore, and I was looking more towards commercial music, big bands, that sort of thing. So I changed to trumpet, and that's where the journey kind of kicked off.
And you've played trumpet in many show bands and things over the years?
Yes, I started in professional theatre, playing in pit orchestras from early 20s. My first show was West Side Story. It was a touring show from Australia.
It's a baptism by fire for a score.
Well, let's just say that it was a very challenging year. And I think we played something like 80 shows.
Wow.
And
whoa,
that's
cool.
It was an amazing experience. And 2 weeks before the first rehearsal, I was asked by the lead trumpet player, because I was playing third, could you play the second part, because the second player thinks it's too hard for him.
Wow.
And it's actually a split lead part, because the lead part's so difficult that it needs to be shared over two players. So he was me really stepping up to the plate.
And was this touring, did you say?
It was touring from Australia, so it just came to the Civic Theatre.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Cool. It and then nice. You've just carried on ever since?
Absolutely. I got the bug. And musical theatre is something that is very close to my heart. Some amazing people that you meet in the musical side of things, the backstage people, the musical directors, the cast, they're all lovely. Mm. And I think it's a family. So as you progress your way through from show to show, you do start to see some familiar faces and create some really meaningful friendships.
That's cool. Favourite musical you've played?
Well, I think it's still an earworm for me playing Priscilla last year.
Okay, still in your head. Yeah.
It's still in my head, yeah. But Jersey Boys would have to be another great favourite.
Got on stage time in that, didn't you?
I did have some on stage time, and I enjoyed that very much. So, yeah, as much as I enjoy being behind the scenes, I do enjoy getting up there every
appearance.
Now and again.
Yeah, nice. Nice. But tonight we're not here to talk music. We're here to talk lighting and sound and sort of this, I don't know if it's new, but this venture that you're going into now, into this side of the world. What is it that sparked an interest or a passion in this sort of lighting and sound space?
Well, I guess as a musician, that has its limitations and there's a certain level of demand for a session player like me. So my journey through work was actually through electronics. And I was an electronics technician with what is now Spark, and then progressed into fixing photocopiers, which was, you know, got me out and about, and right. I enjoyed that. So during that time, I started thinking, well, yeah, it might be quite good to start building a sound system. And I was working with a girl group who needed somebody to supply sound, and then I ended up managing them as well. And yeah, I just started buying gear and more gear and more gear.
And now, where's the journey taken you?
It's sort of transitioned more into doing multiple roles, and that's running sound and running lighting. And for theatre, I've had a certain focus on corporate events, mm-hmm. doing awards at nights and conferences, those sorts of things. But I really love the challenge of those multiple disciplines that are required for musical theatre. And because I have a passion for it and an understanding of what's required from the other side of the technical arena, I think I can work really well with the producers and the directors to create something really unique and, turn vision into reality, or at least help them on that journey.
So let's unpack that. If someone comes to you and says, okay, let's start lighting first, we want you to light our show, what do you need from a director, and sort of at what point, like how involved do you like a director to be versus give me some ideas and let me run with it? Like, how does it work for you? How does your creativity spark off a director?
Well, I think it really comes down to the director themselves, how busy or how involved they are with the cast. They might be bogged down with so much in their lives that they need somebody like me to come to them with some ideas. And I kind of prefer that because it allows me to be a little bit more creative, and I love that aspect of my job. And I don't call it a job because it's a job. I label something that you don't like doing. I love doing this, and I will spend all my waking hours just playing around with ideas and creating some lighting scenes and soundscapes so that we can create something good. So I think once you get into the theatre, I want to be about 80% there, and then the directors can say, oh, let's tweak a few things. But I'm certainly happy to have those conversations right at the beginning. It depends up. Depends on them, but I think most people these days have got so many balls in the air, they really want you to take charge.
And a lot of that comes down, I guess, to the trust of the person, if they've worked with you before, etc. And you know, if it's somebody brand new, you might want to give them a bit more information because you haven't built that. And over time, you just have those people that you just go, no, you know me, I know, you know the show, this is where we'll work. How do you work, Emma? Do you like to give lots to your sound and lighting people, like, let's just talk lighting for now, or do you have a very clear sort of mapped out plan?
It probably depends what the show is, and it probably depends who I'm working with. Because if it's someone that I know I can literally just say, go for it, I will, with a bit of, you know, obviously a bit of, I'd like, you know, it's this kind of a feel. So, yeah, it needs to be this kind of a look. Or, you know, sometimes I might have a few inspirational kind of picks or something like that, that I'm kind of like, this is really what I want. You know, but I have worked with people before that I literally kind of need to spell it out, because otherwise the concern is you don't know what you're going to end up with.
Yeah. It's a lovely moment though as a director when you sit with a lighting person and they show and they've just totally got it.
Yeah.
But they've added surprises that you couldn't have dreamed of. That's those moments that I love. Yeah.
I think the worst moments though are when you sit through a number of shows and you go, I'm sure it didn't do that last night. And you realise that they're still programming during the season as they go. And it's a bit like, oh my gosh.
Oh, yes, yes. What about sound? You know, what do you think makes a good sound engineer / operator these days?
Somebody that has, like, if you're talking theatre or just in general?
Mainly, I guess, in theatre. That's our biggest listenership.
Yeah, I think for a lot of the venues that I'm working in, they are multi-purpose venues. So you're setting up a sound system that isn't ordinarily in that space. So the way I look at it is, from an audience's perspective, is I don't want to sit in any seat and hear something different to somebody who's sitting in the front row or the back row or the left side or the right side of the venue. So first of all, how can I create that? And the way I create it is, let's go mono. I love stereo. It sounds great in the headphones. It's in your car, wherever you may be listening. But mono is the best way to deliver sound in a venue like that. The other thing is to, if you've ever sat in a cafe, and good sound in a cafe, when it's noisy, is lots of good quality speakers, little ones all around the room, because neither one of them is too loud.
Yeah.
So that's the way I approach some of these venues, is I'll have a decent front of house PA, but I'll also have satellites running down the venue so that you get that same experience no matter where you're seated. But it's really important that none of those speakers are actually pushing sound energy and overlapping those other ones from the other side of the room. So getting that mix right from the get-go is super important. That's your that's the building blocks, I believe.
One of the hardest things I find is, you know, you're always juggling a budget and you're juggling coming into a venue and all those dates, is it always feels that sound has come in right at the end, because that's usually when you can afford it, or the venue, you're finding in the venue, and it's never quite enough time for the techs to actually know the show. You know, do you ever go out to like a rehearsal and start getting to know it before you go into a venue?
100%.
Yeah. See, I wish more did that, because I feel like you're always having that conversation about sound at the very last second, when you're actually really busy trying to pull off a dress rehearsal, and for the first time you're introducing such a vital thing.
I couldn't consider doing it that way.
Interesting.
I definitely want to be involved very, very early on. I want to hear the vocalist, so I want to get an idea of how much air they're pushing. Because a microphone is only as good as the air pressure that's coming out of the person's mouth. It's, you know, singing. And if someone's got a tiny little whispery voice, I've got to think about how I'm going to mic them and the challenges that I might have working with them.
And is that when you decide what mic's better for them, i.e. one in the forehead versus at the side, etc.? Does that play a part?
I don't have that expansive array of microphones.
Right.
But I will definitely consider how I EQ them, how I set up their EQ, and compression. I don't want to play around too much with compression, but it is important, certainly when you're working with junior actors. They'll get excited and they'll push their voice beyond what the microphone really likes, so you do need to sort of cap that, and they might whisper when they're nervous. And through the course of the production, over the 2 or 3 or 4 shows they might be performing, their confidence will increase. So we need to be prepared for that, and with 16, 20 head mics, you can't be adjusting those on the fly. Yes, you can ride the faders, but to go in and re-EQ them or change their compression is something that you really want to set up at the beginning. And that's when it's really important for me to get to know the actors themselves. Yeah, yeah. So when I sound check them, I want to have a conversation with them, just like you and I are having now. And then I want you to sing. Sing something that's big. Maybe it's from the show, maybe it's not. And then over that time, they get to know me as the guy at the back of the theatre that's just talking them through the process. They get that confidence, and then I get a really good sense of what energy I can get from them on stage.
Do you find it hard in this world now of understudies and alternates? Like, are you able to pre-plan those people as well?
Yes, I think it's fairly simple to manage. An alternate is going to be using the microphone that the other actor was using. So it's really just, if it's a quick adjustment, I can do that on the fly. It's just your gain setup. Right. It's how sensitive the mic is. Is their voice bigger or quieter? If it's a female role, it's most likely the understudy or the alternate is a female, so they're going to have similar EQ settings. So it's not too difficult. No. Mm.
Is there a preference for sound versus lighting that you like doing more, or do you like give me the total control?
I love sound, but if you ask me what my why is, why do I do what I do, it's to create an experience for the audience. And an audience will walk away, they were not going to say, that was great sound. They're going to say, that was great lighting. And
they'll know when the sound doesn't work, though.
Correct. So if you walk away,
they might not appreciate the work that's gone in to make it sound so good.
Yeah. Absolutely. If they hear feedback, during the show, and what I mean by feedback for your listening audience is that squealy noise that you hear when someone first talks on a microphone. That is definitely a no-no, and so you err on the side of caution when it comes to pushing those levels too high. You know where those levels are, so you test those out. But, to answer your question, from playing the trumpet to doing sound and lighting, I also sing. Everyone has its place, I couldn't answer that.
I guess playing in the band's given you some tools about miking a band, though, which, is also so integral with musical theatre that we get that mix right.
Absolutely. I just finished a show last week, Gulliver's Travels at the Pump House, and I had a live band on stage, and one of my dear friends was playing soprano saxophone, and he said to me, "Awesome sound." And he said it several times during the week, and that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm very careful about mic placement and separation of mics, because certainly you don't want a loud trumpet player or a commercial trumpet player like me sitting right next to a violin with a highly sensitive mic. And if you are, I bring in some baffles and things to contain the sound. Certainly drummers, I want to put as much sort of baffling around them so that it contains the sound and everything is nice and crisp, and I have complete control over their microphone.
And when it comes to different venues in New Zealand, and boy, we have the sublime to the ridiculous, you'd mentioned to me once before you have like lights on trusses and things, so to make it easy that any venue can then be lit, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, my business is not like your large-scale sound and lighting audio companies. I do most of it on my own, and so one of my things that I don't do is I don't climb ladders, so I'm not up in the in the rigging, rigging lights. It's just one thing. It's costly in terms of time. There's health and safety issues that we have to consider, and certainly budget as well. If you want lights to be rigged, and the amount of lights that I bring in, it's hours and hours and hours of work, and I have to charge for that. Mm. So I thought, wouldn't it be easier if I pre-rigged vertical lighting trusses, which I could bring in and place them around the stage. In the next show I'm doing, we're making a feature of them.
Mm.
But generally they're hidden. And that just gives me the opportunity to pre-program some scenes, and I know exactly what they're going to look
right,
like on stage. And it's just a matter of, you know, changing the focus of where actors may be on the stage. But by reading the script, you know where the actors are going to be. Most scripts do give you some lighting ideas. But I was just saying to Emma before the show, I do use AI from time to time. And one of the great things that AI can bring is that when you get a script, you can get AI to scrape it and give you some ideas of some of the lighting scenes that you could create for the show.
Wow.
And so I'll start building those based on that information. I go, well, yeah, it's close, but I'd like to do this.
Mm.
And it kind of gets you off the mark, so to speak.
Mm.
So it gets you from that maybe 50% finished product to that 80%, and then between you and the director when you move into the theatre can polish up the rest. So,
and then much quicker, I imagine, for setup, because you're walking in with your gear all pre-rigged.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's much... much, much quicker. Absolutely.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a short music break and then we'll continue the conversation with Brendan. Ant Tarrant, who is in our opening theme song, has been busy this year releasing music. He's had a quiet few years, but he's been back. Here is his latest track released just last week. It's called Candlelights.
kind of fantasy, and I don't know how long I'll be. Now don't you wait, now don't you wait for me. We'll shine like two little candlelights, but on opposite sides of the sea.
And Tarrant, Candlelights, great song, and lovely to hear you're putting out music again. So back to you, Brendan. When we're talking, we were watching Aunt Tarrant's music video there, and of course everything's lit up. Like, what sort of gigs can you light or create sound for?
Well, I guess I'm not just focused on theatre, although it is a passion of mine. Being involved in dance shows through to bands, videos like that. I guess anything where you can use lighting on its own, or combined with sound, running tracks. There's a huge variety of things like that.
Yeah, so we're talking dance shows, music recordings, concerts.
Yeah, definitely concerts. Yeah, 100%. I've done a few of those.
Theatre events. And you mentioned the corporate world that you did some things. Is that more sort of event spaces?
Yeah, from corporate events like award ceremonies. There's one I run every year. I produce it. I pretty much do everything. And so they're, you know, certainly within my scope. I would limit my audience size to maybe about 500 or 600. But anything greater than that, I would work with other partners to bring in some of those solutions. Like, there's one I'm doing at Dewdrop Event Centre at the end of the year, 2,000 people. So I'm providing all the on-stage lighting, but I'm getting some other suppliers to bring in the larger sound. There's a 300-piece choir, for example.
That's
something I probably just don't need to stretch myself, because I need to produce the show. So, there's horses for courses, so to speak,
How do you keep yourself upskilled, I guess, with technology changing, or is a lot of it trial and error that you get to sort of just sit at home playing and trying to experiment? I don't know. I've just got this vision, Emma, from what he was saying before about, you know, looking at the scripts of Brendan at home with, you know, all these lights going off as he's creating the scenes, and his neighbours going, oh, he's at it again.
Well, I wonder too, because, like, a friend of mine who's directing for the first time has just got in a 3D model of the set with all the little set pieces in that, and is doing all their little scenes in that. Like, is that what you do? You literally have a mini version of your lighting rig?
100%.
Really?
So my workroom at the moment is completely full of all my vertical lighting trusses, my movers and wall washers. And just this afternoon I moved in my front of house into my kitchen and lounge area, and I'll be setting all that up tomorrow to get all my front of house washers. So it's got to the point where it's just taking over my living space. But I'm completely comfortable with that, because anybody that's fascinated or enjoys their vacation like I do likes to be surrounded by their toys. And I respect all my equipment. I respect all of the cables that connect them, because if there's any one thing that goes faulty, it's likely to have a snowball effect. So going back to doing these events, one of the really important things we have to do as a technical person is make sure that we know where we're getting our power from, how we've connected everything up. For example, sound and lighting, two completely separate power sources. Are there any other electronics being run in the building that could interfere with the power and cause what we call dirty power? We've put a hum into the power system. So there's a lot of those sort of things I need to be aware of, but I digress.
No, that's right. It's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, I just imagine. And keeping up with technology, like, do you have to, is it a field that's constantly changing, or is it a bit slower than, say, some of our other technology that we're watching?
Not at all. It is ever evolving. I just bought a new digital desk end of last year, 32 channels of just amazing tech that can effectively run these theatre shows, as long as I've programmed it correctly. In terms of lighting, I tend not to use the big, you know, the theatre light desks so much anymore. I'm doing it all on computer and MIDI-based controllers. So you can, what they call MIDI map, a function to a button.
Right.
So when you push that button, it does something that maybe 10 or other so buttons used to do. And so it's making sure that those cues are in the right place in the script. So the script is extremely important to me. And, yeah, making sure I put those cues in and follow them.
I used to love sitting in the lighting box with a big, long theatre light board. Oh, it was heaven, moving all those up and down. I don't know that I'd want a computer. I quite like them. Well, mind you, I like the old radio station too, because we had all those extra dials. There's not enough here for me to play with.
You're quite funny.
Oh, look, Brendan, it sounds fantastic. And so the goal now is, you know, and part of coming on the show, you're available for hire. People should get in touch and start spreading. Are you just Auckland based, or do you travel a bit depending on the gig?
I've travelled the whole country multiple times doing a show. It was a show for Spark.
Oh, yep.
And I think we toured for 3 to 4 weeks. We've done that several times. I'm available to go anywhere. Obviously, I want to try and keep to Auckland or that area if I can. But if there's budget to help me travel, to pay for the travel, then I'm happy to do that too.
Brilliant. How can people get in touch and find out more?
Probably the best way to get in touch with me is through my website, 11degreesentertainment.co.nz. So 11 is 11 degrees. DEGREES entertainment.co.nz. You'll find all my details, my email address, and my phone number. I'm happy to receive a phone call or however you like to get in contact with me.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you every success with your venture, and certainly in New Zealand, there's always need for plenty of lighting and sound technicians, so I'm sure you'll be kept busy, especially how busy the art scene we're seeing really picking up.
It's great to see, and thank you for having me on the show, Stephen and Emma.
Awesome.
No worries, thank you.
Awesome, all the best. All right, we're going to take a music break and get ready to chat to Emma Kate from Wellington. This is one of her tracks. It's called Invisible Broken Hearts.
Scared of our crooked past, where you hung up on the blurred lines, or stuck in a haze. Seems like you convinced yourself to count down the days. Nothing's gonna be the same, and I can't look at you the same. I shouldn't be allowed to feel this much. I own up to my own mistakes, but I'm to fall, and you just wanna fly.
Invisible Broken Hearts.
What a beautiful sound.
Beautiful sound. And we're so lucky now to head to Wellington to chat to Emma herself. Hey, Emma, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
We are good. That's a beautiful track we just played.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, and look, we're going to talk a little bit. You're here to release a new song, which we'll play halfway through. But look, before we go anywhere, tell us about your journey in music. When did it first kick off for you?
Yeah, so I've been writing and making music for a long time now. I started writing songs when I was 8, and I taught myself guitar at 10. And I've kind of been singing like my whole life, all through high school and everything as well. But I kind of, and I always had that dream of, I want to be a famous singer. I want to do music with the rest of my life. And I kind of, I knew that, but I didn't do anything about it until 2021, which is when I put out my debut single. And since then, I've just been putting out music here and there. But especially this year, I've really been like, I've got so many plans and I'm really trying to go full force into it and make it my dream career.
Awesome.
That's so cool. And look, you've written 300 songs already?
I've written more than 300.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. Who's, like, from a music point of view, who's inspired you? Who are the artists that you sort of have, I guess, drawn some attention from?
Yeah, I get inspired by so many people all the time. My main one probably always will be Taylor Swift. I think she's an incredible songwriter and musician, and so my work is quite influenced by her and what she does. But I also get inspired by a lot of smaller artists. At the moment, I listen to Alexia, who's an Australian musician, and I find people on TikTok all the time, so I feel like I'm just constantly getting inspired by a lot of female pop artists all the time.
That's cool. Now, when you write music, where are you drawing your inspiration from?
Yeah, I write about my own experiences a lot of the time, or potentially things that my friends have gone through as well, friends and family. I write about emotions a lot. I feel like everyone has a lot of things that they go through, and for me, my way of processing them is writing them and turning them into songs. So, yeah, the inspiration really comes from the heart for me.
You seem too young to have had too much inspiration for 300 plus songs, Emma. That's crazy.
Well, you never know. I mean, all of emotions.
Yeah. A question we always ask musicians, are you somebody that writes the lyrics first, the music first? Are you driving in the car and suddenly have to do a voice note? Like, how does the inspiration work and what's your process?
Yeah, it kind of happens differently every time for me. With my new song that you're playing soon, Autumn, that one, it came to me on my walk to work, and I didn't have, like, instruments or anything with me, and I had to write the song, like, in my head, and it was really tough, but, like, I was so excited about it. It came out really well, but a lot of the times I'll just sit down with my guitar and play out some chords and the music and the lyrics kind of come together. Sometimes I'll be on my computer like making a beat or something. Sometimes it's just a lyric that's been in my journal or my notes app on my phone for a while, and I'm like, I'm really resonating with that today. I'm going to write about it. So, yeah, it's kind of different every time. It kind of just strikes you usually at the most inconvenient times, but I think the best songs can be born out of those moments.
Fair call, definitely, definitely.
And do you like to perform live as well as recording?
Oh, yeah, I love performing live. It's one of my favourite things to do in music. I just think, like, the whole connecting with other people was such an important part of what I do. And if there was no one to, like, play my songs to, it's kind of, for me, what's the point, you know? Because I get to see how people react, and they tell me feedback about the song. Sometimes they relate to them, which is really cool. And it makes me so happy to see people, like, singing along. And also, I feel like music is just better live. Like, yeah, you spend so much time recording it and getting it perfect, but when you play it live, there's so much room for mistakes that could also create such a perfect version of the song. It's raw and it's real, and yeah, it's so cool to play live. I love it.
Who's your biggest fan, do you think?
Oh, my biggest fans probably going to be my mum and my dad, I would say. I feel like no one can beat them. They're always playing my music on repeat all the time. They've got playlists, they've put posters up at their work and everything, and they come to all my shows, which is so awesome. I'm so appreciative for their support.
That's cool. What's it like, you know, with the New Zealand music scene, you know, how hard is this to get your music sort of out there and played? And, you know, what sort of, I guess, some advice maybe you'd give to others thinking of going down this journey as well?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the music industry is always going to be hard, but it's kind of like, is anything worth doing not going to be hard? Like, you've kind of just got to go for it. If it's what you want to do, you just have to go for it. And yeah, there's always going to be hard days. You're always going to have rejection or people not replying to you, people putting you down, because people have so many opinions, and for some reason with musicians, they always feel the need to share share them with you, which I find sometimes gets me down, but sometimes it really fuels me to be like, nah, stuff you, I want to be better and do better, actually. And it's like, in the long run, that one person's opinion of me is not going to change, you know, the trajectory of my life. So I think the main thing is just to stick to your guns, and if it's what you want to do, like, you just need to really focus on what you want to create, and yeah, just go for it.
Fair comment. Are you juggling a day job around this, or is this now your full thing?
Yeah, I am juggling a day job.
Yeah.
Definitely juggling act for sure. There's never enough time in a day.
Yeah, I bet. All right, let's take a listen to Autumn. So you mentioned that, you know, this just came to you. Was there any sort of theme or thoughts in your head that triggered this?
I think so. I'd just gotten off the bus. I was living in Christchurch last year, and I'd just gotten off the bus, and I was walking down to work down the main street, Cashel Street, and I walked past the Avon River on my walk to work. And the Avon River, if you know it, it's got these beautiful big trees lining it, and all of them, the leaves had started turning orange. And so then I just kind of got this inspiration for a song called Autumn, and all of the cliches that came with it, and, you know, how seasons of love can be like compared to like the changing of a season. It's a new season, and so you're starting again, and yeah, I don't know, the song really came to me so fast that it's hard to like explain what it's about in a way, but especially also because I wrote it in my head. But yeah, I came home from work that day. I'd written the rest of the song in my lunch break on a park bench, actually, that day. I came home from work, and I immediately picked up my guitar and just played out what I thought I had, made a few adjustments. But yeah, the song was really special to me, and I think, yeah, I really enjoyed writing that way because it felt really unique, and I hadn't done that too much before, especially with it turning out successfully.
That's cool. All right, let's take a listen. Stay on the line. We'll chat to you some more in a second, but here is Autumn.
The seasons teach me how to love, but they can also make me leave. I'm filling acorns in my glove so I can hold on to this fallen feeling. When I'm rocked out by the fireplace, and when I've got nowhere else to stay, no one else understands the way I need you. So hold me in your arms the way you always do. Don't like the winter, it's too cold. We all get like this when we get old, but I know one thing that's always true. I never felt a real autumn until I met you. We put the TV volume low, I figure out your eyes are green. You kiss me on my neck so slow, and now I'm falling in a million pieces. No, you don't understand just how much I love the autumn. Getting older each April, feel the chill in my bones, but I don't wanna let this go. Don't like the winter, it's too cold. We all get like this when we get old, but I know one thing, it's always true.
did. I should have stayed true to this. Well, if only I could rewind the time, I'd listen to the Beatles and the Butterflies. Take a chance on a sunset, see a sad, no more regrets. I'll be safe in your arms till the night turns dark. We don't like the winter, it's too cold. We all get like this when we get old. But I know one thing that's always true.
Autumn, great track. Emma, another great track.
Yeah, I know. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
So, how many instruments do you play?
My main instrument is just guitar, but I can play a little bit of like ukulele, keys, bass, just a few little bits of bobs, but yeah, my main is just guitar and singing.
So when you come to a live gig, are you pulling a band together for that, or is it you on guitar?
Yeah, well, it depends what I feel like on, you know, for the set. Sometimes I don't play guitar at all. Sometimes I will play a mix of electric and acoustic. Sometimes I'll play acoustic. Yeah, it's kind of different for each show, so I like to keep people on their toes.
Fair enough. Now, we live in this world of music videos and things up on YouTube and stuff. How big a part is that playing or going to play for you in the future?
Yeah, I think it's important to build a visual world when it comes to a song, because it just adds another layer and another depth into the inside of, you know, what the song's actually about. And with Autumn, I did do a music video with my friend Molly, and she really captured it so beautifully. We actually filmed it in summer, so it was really tricky. I had my boyfriend Ebed, who colour graded it, so we made it look more autumn-like. But I think it just like helps, you know, expand the world of the song and let it have life for a little bit longer. And yeah, I guess maybe when you see like autumn trees, you might think of me in my song now, and that kind of thing.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. So, okay, get out the crystal ball. If we were to interview you in 5 years' time, where will you be? What's happening? What's going on? Take us forward. Where would you like to be in just 5 years' time?
In 5 years' time, I'm going to shoot for the stars. I would love to be, like, headlining the arenas and stadiums in New Zealand especially, but I'd love to have gone on a world tour. Definitely want to have released a few albums and maybe done a collab with Taylor Swift. You never know.
That is definitely shooting for the sky, but you know what they say.
Yeah.
If you don't shoot for the tops of the trees, you'll only reach the branches.
Exactly. That's so true.
So apart from Taylor, who else would you put your hand up to headline for?
Oh, that's a good question. At the moment, I would love to do like Lizzie McAlpine. I also love Sabrina Carpenter. I think she would be a really cool one to open for. Even in New Zealand, I'd actually love to open for Cassie Henderson. I think she's incredible. I've seen her perform a few times now, and yeah, she's amazing. Every time I see her, my jaw just like falls on the floor, so I feel like she would be really cool as well.
Well, you need to reach out, send her your music. Like, this is what's happening. People are getting on because they're actually contacting their fans and going, this is me, I'd love to headline you. So, you know,
don't be shy
to put yourself out there. When you listen to your, you know, 300 plus songs that you've created, have you noticed a natural sort of shift, I guess, in perhaps genre or shift in tone or feel or vibe as you've kind of matured with your music?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, back in high school, my songs were very, like, basic and, like, not very in-depth. And I've definitely explored going more in-depth in different periods of my life a few years ago, I was really into rock music and kind of grungy stuff. I was listening to a lot of Rage Against the Machine and maybe like Paramore and things like that. So my songs that I wrote around that time, I think I'd also like really got into playing my electric guitar. Lots of those songs are like darker and more about like mental health, whereas I'm not in that mental state right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely switched from writing songs like that. I mean, I'm not saying I'll never go back to doing that, because I do love creating music like that, but yeah, I feel like it definitely depends what I'm going through in life at the time. It really reflects in my writing.
Brilliant. Look, we're going to end the interview in a minute with the song Chemical. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, Chemical is actually, so last year when I was writing, I actually wrote 100 and like 3 songs last year or something. Wow. I was trying to write 100 in February and November. I challenged myself to write a song every single day that month. And in February, Chemical was the last song that I wrote of the month. And when I was reviewing the songs, I saw Chemical and I was like, oh, I really liked that one. I really want to record it. It came really easily. And so I produced it in my bedroom at the time and sent it off to my friend Adam, and he whipped it up and made it into what it is now. But yeah, it's just a cute little love song, you know, the feeling of falling in love for the first time and the sparks are flying. And yeah, that's kind of the feeling that came out of that one. And yeah, I was super stoked with how it turned out.
Do you ever go back to your old songs that you haven't recorded but you've written and go, okay, I want to take this one now and really make it work? Or is it a kind of, it's either in the vibe or it isn't, and you've just written them and thanks very much, but I'll move on to the next one?
No, I feel like there's a bit of both. There's a bit of like, why the heck do I ever write that? Nobody is ever seeing that. That's ever seen the light of day. But there's also songs that I will find and I'm like, I've completely forgot about this one. This is exactly like what I'm going through right now and I love it. And there's been a few songs over the past year or so that I've been working on that have been ones that I wrote maybe 5+ years ago. So it's cool that they're like still relevant to me and like a such different part of life.
Brilliant. Awesome. Emma, we could chat to you all night. If you're ever in Auckland, please come and visit us and come and play and sing live in the studio. We'd love to have you here. In the meantime, how can people track you, follow you, find your music and all those important things?
Well, thank you for having me, first off. It's been lovely. But you can find me anywhere. My Instagram and my TikTok are both emmakate.25. And I'm on Facebook, Emma Kate, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Emma Kate. I'm just Emma Kate everywhere.
Fantastic. Listeners, go and support. You know, that's how it works. And have a listen. And we'll look forward to your next music coming out soon.
Thank you so much.
No,
to talk to you.
No worries. So we're going to close now with Chemical by Emma Kate. After the break, we've got your bulletins, and then we head to London to chat to Dr. Nicholas Brown and see what he's doing in the West End. But right now, here is Chemical.
I want you more than wanted anyone before in my whole life. I'm never sure about anything, but you're the cure. I'd give up all my time to be in your embrace. Lips locked, don't stop the clock, or I'll lose control. You know how I fold. I'm way too deep, can't sleep, and the room is cold. It feels chemical. A comet passed through our hearts now and made us intertwined. You make everything make sense in my wild mind. You made all the stars align when our lips locked. Don't stop the clock or I'll lose control. Chemical.
Chemical, Emma Kay. What a fabulous young artist, Emma.
Yeah, it's always great when we meet these young people, eh?
Yeah, 300 plus songs are really wow. She's got a good career ahead. Now it's time for some bulletins. Remember, if you have something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. And thank you to our fabulous Blake Stanton, for messaging us this week. He's got a live gig coming up on Thursday. It's called End of Summer. He's performing with Macy and Tag James. Hope I said that right. And you can buy tickets from Under the Radar. And it is on at Big Fan in Auckland.
And Arts on Tour New Zealand are bringing a superb and sensory-rich experience of Sean Kelly and the Super 8s to 20 towns and centres. 20, that's a lot. Coromandel, Thames, Onifero, Whangarei, Pohangia, Kaikoura, Akaroa, Fairlie, Gore, Tianao, Stewart Island, Roxburgh, Cromwell, Queenstown, Ranfurly, Hokitika, Reefton, Onikaka.
That sounds like that ad, that TV ad that you used to read off all the different parts.
Yep, that's the one. So Sean Kelly and friends present an ultimate show of live Irish music played to the backdrop of Super 8 movies taken by Sean's dad and renowned cinema enthusiast in and around Derry and Donegal, 1958 to 1988. Wow. So that is happening. And then as well as that, they've got a quick recap of the Mr. Fungus kicking off his month-long national tour in Carterton. And then he's travelling to a number of places as well. So lots happening. So that is Mr. Fungus and Sean Kelly in the Super 8s with Arts on Tour.
We should have had Mr. Fungus in last week with the worm.
Would have
been great.
We could have.
Trusted with raising two future princesses, Marion Crawford spent 16 years inside the royal household before a memoir sparked a scandal that would exile her from the palace forever. Melanie Tate's acclaimed play, The Queen's Nanny, makes its New Zealand premiere from the 14th to the 24th of May at the Pump House Theatre in Takapuna, presented by Tadpole Productions. This blackly funny and deeply affecting comedy drama brings to life the extraordinary true story of Marion Crawford, the governess who raised the young princesses destined to become Queen Elizabeth II and Princess Margaret, and the firestorm that followed when she published her memoir. It has Louise Wallace, fabulous Louise, actor, journalist, director, and co-programmer of Tadpole Productions, along with Melanie Tate. Now, it is on at the Pump House from the 14th. Head to pumphouse.co.nz for all the tickets.
Now, this is pretty cool. A new sober dance event series called Clear is launching in the Auckland CBD every Thursday at El Bruto from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. with an all-female and gender-diverse lineup of DJs. So Auckland is set to welcome a new kind of after-work ritual with the launch of Clear, a weekly sober dance session designed to give city workers a chance to unwind without alcohol. Now, this sounds pretty cool. It's created by The Naked World, which is a community behind events such as the Undie Party and the Naked in the Trees Festival. It reflects a glowing global shift towards mindful nightlife and sober, curious socialization. Rather than late-night partying, Clear offers a short, energizing dance experience designed to reset the mind and body after work. Sounds pretty cool, Stephen, doesn't it? So that is happening every Thursday at El Bruto with tickets available online. Check out www.thenaked.world.
Brilliant. Now, arguably the greatest play of the 20th century, Arthur Miller's A View from the Bridge, is returning to Auckland after 15 years. The searing modern tragedy is storming Kew Theatre from the 9th of April, that's this week, through to the 3rd of May. Set in the Docklands of the 1950s Brooklyn, the play follows Eddie Carbone, a wharfie who lives by his own code. When two undocumented cousins arrive seeking work and safety, Eddie offers shelter, but when desire enters the house, the fuse is lit. What follows is inevitable, brutal, and unforgettable. Ooh, sounds great. What a stunning lineup of cast and team behind this. It is on at Kew Theatre from the 9th of April to the 3rd of May. And for bookings, though, you head to silotheatre.co.nz.
Now, Millie, which is with Brick House and Alux Theatre, a fiercely Mexican unapologetic queer work which rips open machoism and defends culture as the body itself, fusing physicality and genre into sacred rituals of corn. The work challenges binaries and silences that still shape queer identity. This is happening on from the 7th to the 11th of April at the Basement Theatre. So jump onto Basement or iticket.co.nz to get tickets to Melee.
Now remember last week we interviewed the worm, that mischievous, when a mischievous bird pokes its beak through the ceiling and sweeps away with his mum, a determined little worm sets off on an adventure of a lifetime. That's taking place at Topo Theatre this week before heading to Pump House in the second week of the school holidays, then finishing off at the Mangere Arts Centre. Head to nightsong.co.nz for all the details.
And of course everyone's seen it everywhere, and Juliet the musical opens this week. The award, it's created by the Emmy Award winning writer of Schitt's Creek, and it's a hilarious, heartfelt, high energy musical that flips the script on the world's most iconic love story. Check it out from the 9th of April to the 3rd of May at the Civic, and then it's going to Wellington and then to Christchurch, so you can get your tickets in Auckland with Ticketmaster.
Now, I'm looking forward to this one. Bad Jelly the Witch bursts delightfully onto the stage in this hilarious, slightly spooky and wildly silly far-out theatre adventure. When Tim and Rose set off to rescue their missing cow, Lucy, they wander deep into an enchanted forest and straight into the clutches of the baddest witch of all. Adapted for stage by Alana O'Sullivan, it's from Spike Milligan's beloved classic. This is a fast-paced production, and it's packed with outrageous characters, big laughs, and imaginative storytelling that children will love and parents and grandparents will fondly remember. It's hitting the Pump House Theatre this week, opening on Thursday the 9th of April through to Saturday. Tickets are available from pumphouse.co.nz.
Now, Journey B. Jones' Essential Survival Guide to School Junior is happening with Northern School of Performing Arts at Centre Stage Theatre in Orewa. It's based on the wildly popular Journey B. Jones books by Barbara Park. This laugh-out-loud musical follows everyone's favourite sassy, spirited first grader as she shares her essential tips for surviving school, from making new friends to surviving the cafeteria. You need to expect high-energy musical numbers, big laughs for little and big kids, a talented young cast, and heartwarming lessons about friendship, courage, and being yourself. That is on Friday and Saturday night, the 10th and the 11th of April, at Centre Stage.
Now, reminder, we had on last week the team from Playhouse Theatres carry the musical, so head to eventfinder.co.nz. That's kicking off on Saturday the 11th. And our fabulous sponsors for the month, Foolish Wit Theatre, have The Glass Menagerie, an intimate and quietly devastating portrait of a family living with hope, frustration and unspoken longing. Now, that's hitting the Pump House from the 29th of April through until the 3rd of May.
Now, if you've got things coming up, remember to get in touch with us. We are booking up fast. info@kickarts.org.nz for you to let us know so we can schedule you in, or maybe just put you into our events list.
Brilliant. Time now for a little music break, and then we're heading to London to chat to Nick Brown. Here is our good friend Lisa Crawley with her new number, which is Drive, the classic Cars song.
Gonna tell you when it's too late. Who's gonna tell you when things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking that wrong. Oh, but who's gonna drive you home tonight? Who's gonna pick you up
gonna hold you down when you shake. Who's gonna come around when you break? When you break, you know you can't.
Well, now joining us is definitely not a stranger to Kick Arts, but beaming in from a completely different place to where we're normally speaking with him, which would either be in the studio or from Westlake Boys, is Nick Brown. How's it going in London?
Kia ora team, it's going really well. It's a wonderful yet strange experience. I'm here in South London in what was sunny Chislehurst, which is about 30 minutes from the centre of town. Staying in an apartment that my wife and I have, which is lovely. And I'm having a great time, thank you.
So what sort of things are you doing in the art space over there?
So Stephen, I'm on a year's sabbatical from my lovely school, Westlake Boys High, which, as you know, I love and have been working at for about 11 years now. And they gave me a sabbatical, and I really wanted to go and do some creative stuff for myself. So I thought, I've been doing bits of TV and theatre and stuff, I should go and see if I can London and see what happens. And I was totally philosophical and thought nothing might happen. And luckily, a very old friend of mine, Susie Dunbreck, at Infinity Artists Management, took me on. And I've had about 15 auditions, and I'm currently in a show, understudying the lead in town, strangely, a new show about the life of Claude Monet, the Impressionist artist.
Ooh.
Now, I've seen some of the social media for it, and the costumes are stunning.
Yeah. They are really lovely. I mean, the whole aesthetic and design is quite beautiful. Obviously, because it's about the life of Claude Monet, you'd expect that the design would be really good. And Libby, our designer, is fantastic. And there's a whole lot of videography as well. So there are some really special moments where, for example, there's old Monet, who I understudy, and is played by the remarkable Jeff Shankly, who we should talk about. And then there's young Monet, played by Dean John Wilson. Dean was the original Aladdin in the West End in the Disney Aladdin show. He's lovely. And what a voice. Oh, my God, what a voice. He's a real tenor. Like, he goes all the way up to top D. He's in the warm-up. And it's like, I'm standing beside him. It's like, oh, well, yeah, he's just stuff you would never hear. It's remarkable. And it's beautiful. Anyway. Dean will be painting, for example, or quote-unquote painting. And what he paints with his hand appears within the set design. It's really clever. So there's a lot of kind of integrative technologies used. And there's a two-part revolving stage, which is quite complex as well. The whole thing's a treat.
That's cool. Did you know much about the show before you auditioned?
Good question. So my agent, Susie, she was very involved. It was a big success at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2023. And she had given a lot of really good advice to the composer, Carmel, who's a New Yorker. She's from New York. And so when I was in the mix for it, I did a lot of research around it and watched a lot of the clips from Edinburgh. But the Edinburgh show, you know, most Edinburgh shows are about an hour to 80 minutes long, Stephen, because there are so many shows back to back to back. So this is a two hour and 10 minute show, and it's very complex now compared to the lovely show that was in Edinburgh. So so I knew a little bit about it, Stephen, but not a huge amount. But like most things, I auditioned for about... I've had about 15 auditions, which has been great. And then, trying to find the time to do things, because oftentimes you'll get a lot of material. And auditions are pretty intense in London, if truth be told. So,
yeah, I was just going to ask that. How is that different to what you're used to here in New Zealand? Talk us through that.
So it's a really good question. So ostensibly, if you were an actor from New Zealand going into auditions in London, they would in the main feel pretty similar, but the scrutiny and the intensity and I would call it all very lean. There's no fat on this particular figure. It's all very, it's very direct, it's very quick, it's very generous and nice, and it's quite demanding. So my last audition for this show, for example, I had, it's quite a funny story, I had two songs, because I'm understudying the lead and I'm understudying the antagonist, the Marquis, who's the art critic. And I had a song for both. I had a two-minute monologue for Old Monet. Ooh, that was intense to learn. And then I had a couple of scenes for the Marquis. Plus, I had to provide a song of my own choice, which was reflective of the material. The reason it's funny is because I, in the 3 or 4 days I had before the final round, I learned all the material apart from the song for Old Monet, which is, it's quite scatological. It's quite lots of different random thoughts. And I thought, oh, I just read this off the sheet music. I've done all the rest of the work. And then I got to the audition space and had my contact lenses in, and it was at the end of the afternoon, and I couldn't see a thing, Stephen, without my contacts in. So the most embarrassing thing I've ever said in an audition, which was, hey, have you got this in a large print? to which came the reply from Christian, our very lovely director, went, no, Nick, this is a professional theatre audition. And I went, okay. So I kind of blagged my way through and said, oh, well, I've stuffed that. I'm not going to get the job. And then a few days later, they said, they'd like to offer you this. What do you think?
Oh, brilliant.
So, but
did
yeah,
they give you the script in large print?
No, they didn't. So I just had to, I just couldn't see it. I had to take my contact lenses out. It was so funny.
How long's this commitment?
This runs until May, so this will run pretty much to the end of my time, and then I'll probably come home to New Zealand in June.
Okay.
So, and there are other jobs kind of floating around, but my gorgeous son Cooper is still at school. He's in year 13, and I'm struggling to be away from him and Claire. Yes. I must confess, Katie is here, as you know, at drama school, like your Katie in Melbourne. You're Katie in Melbourne, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been lovely. I see a lot of Katie.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been really weird, and I've seen some amazing people. So I was very close to getting the dad role in the new musical One Day, and I got to audition in front of Olivier and Tony Award winning director Max Webster, and that was an amazing treat. And that was a lovely audition. So, and all the auditions have been really lovely, just generosity of spirit and kindness, and just aware that you're probably at peak nervousness.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't know if I've said this to you before, but me, you know, I love New Zealand. We do some really good work in New Zealand, but London is the Premier League.
Mm.
So you go into those audition rooms thinking, oh, you know, these are serious. I mean, Max Webster is like, he directed Macbeth with David Tennant last year. His production of The Importance of Being Earnest is currently on in the West End. So it's like, the stakes are high, man. They are really intense.
So what do you think that... biggest thing or learning has been that you're going to bring home to Aotearoa?
Yeah, especially your school, I guess, being a sabbatical, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't... Mm. It's interesting, eh? Because when we're in rehearsals, the thing I do notice is just the discipline. It's just the focus. As I say, everything is really lean. There's very... Everyone's very generous and social. Everyone goes to the pub after rehearsals. There's not a lot of chitty-chat-chat within the rehearsals themselves. And everyone is practicing. So whenever there's a moment, there's a down moment, you'll just see Dean in the corner. He's running lines. He's running the movements. He's totally in his space. And every moment is milked for maximum value. So there is no wastage at all of any kind. It is so strategic and specific and well plotted out. So, I mean,
how do you think you'd bring that home into a school setting? How do you think we can teach our kids to be that disciplined?
Yeah, I think the two settings are, I do think, a bit mutually exclusive, because our kids, Emma, as you know, that not many of them are going to go on and do a show in the West End. They're not necessarily going to be professional actors, and I think you and I and Stephen as well. Of course, we worked in this space a lot. We are also providers of joy and relief and community. So there are things that happen within professional theatre in London that I don't think are actually super useful to have within a school space. I still think we should be disciplined, but I think there is a bit more. It's not quite as lean. There can be a bit more. It is a bit more relaxed. It is a bit more fun. And it's interesting, you know, everyone in the cast has trained somewhere really impressive. And our students are learning their craft. So, the thing in a professional environment is everyone knows their craft. then everyone has a very specific and individualized instrument. Like Dean, who plays Jean Monnet, you know, he sings remarkably well. What a beautiful voice. And he knows his instrument. He knows his discipline and how his craft gets him to that place. And our job as teachers in our spaces is we have to start to take our students on that journey to get to that place, if that's what they want to do, which is quite different. That's a tricky question. Because I think at Westlake, and probably you guys as well, we do have a lot of focus and discipline. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a show.
Yeah. Perhaps not heading to the pub after rehearsals, though.
This is a good point. Yes, thank you for that qualification. That would be awkward.
Have you seen any good theatre yourself while you've been there? Is there any new shows that you've seen that our listeners should look out for?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of shows, and Katie and I and Claire and I, we've seen a lot. I mean, my favourite shows, you wouldn't have heard of this, is a terrific play called Punch. And it's all about a king hit that occurred in the Midlands on a guy. And it's his story of redemption. And it's a verbatim documentary drama from the Nottingham Playhouse, but it's in the West End. That was terrific. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Oh, my word. Claire Cooper and I went and saw, we did the whole day. So we saw the matinee, which is part one. And then we had supper together and we went back to the Palace Theatre and saw part two. And that just knocked our socks off some of the technical wizardry, the wit and humour with which, almost like magic tricks are done, people floating, elevating, when people arrive through the flue powder, when they arrive through the chimney, I mean, all of that stuff was amazing, and we loved it, and the story was fantastic, and the acting was just terrific. Hades Town for a musical, that was our favourite musical, we thought that was remarkable and beautiful, and really very counterculture West End. So what I mean by that is, it's quite, if you know your Peter Brook, it was very rough and immediate theatre. It was very, very clever. And there was real communion between the audience, designed in a way that the connection between the audience and the cast on stage was very profound. And it's a beautiful piece of mythology that you might think you don't know, Orpheus descending into the underworld. You probably don't know it, but then it's so beautifully done. And we saw Stranger Things. We saw The Great Gatsby, and we got to meet Jamie Moscato afterwards, which was cool, and Katie had a good old chat with him, and he's the lead. He's kind of the leading man in the West End at the moment, Jamie. What a lovely voice. So, yeah, we've seen along to the Royal Court, and I've seen some bad stuff as well, so that's quite interesting. So, you know, it's really interesting. As you probably remember from your trips to London, there is such a huge variety of theatre. That is here. It is remarkable. So yeah, and of course the National Theatre is available. The Royal Shakespeare Company is available. The English Stage Company is available. There's so much stuff.
Brilliant. Well, we're out of time, but thank you so much for zooming in with us to give us a bit of a catch up from the complete other side of the world. And we'll look forward to catching up with you back here in Aotearoa when you're back with your Westlake team.
Love to. Cheers, Matt. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Emma.
Awesome.
Thanks. Man, it makes me want to go back to London.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But for people that heard about Hadestown, they'll be able to come and watch it at the Pump House, because we're doing it with Stage Antics, the teen edition, in June.
Brilliant. Now, well, I'm not going to see you again until May, Emma, because you're away the next 2 weeks, then I'm away. So the fabulous Kristen's going to be in here keeping us in check. but we've got lots booked up for the next few weeks. So if you have something coming up sort of middle of May onwards through into June, email us now, info@kickarts.org.nz, so that we can make sure you get on. And of course, check out our bulletin page, which Emma's always frantically updating during the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, all the best, Emma, with Bad Jelly this week, and then heading down to the South Island. What's your favourite part in Bad Jelly?
Look, our witch is so quirky, and all six cast members are just working so hard. And I think for me, the most favourite thing is just the memories of that story from my youth.
Yeah, I love that press release there about the grandparents will enjoy it, you know, and that's really cool, getting them back to the theatre, because they'll chuckle alone on at their own sort of level in the story.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah. Well, make sure you have a fabulous week. Email us if you've got something coming up, info@kickarts.org.nz. Emma will catch us in a couple of weeks. I'll be back next week. And have a fabulous week. And make sure you
kick some arts.
Kick